Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Wednesday, August 20th, 2014. I'll be your host today. We have an exciting show coming up. Besides the InfoWars reporters in Ferguson, Missouri that are going to be joining us, we're also going to be joined live in studio by Arthur Thompson. And he's the CEO of the John Birch Society. He's in the area promoting his new book called International Merger by Foreign Entanglements. That's exactly what is happening in the world. They're creating these regional trade zones, just like we saw with NAFTA, like we see with the EU, and now they're creating the Trans-Pacific Partnership, joining these regional trade agreements together. And of course, the people who are controlling this country, people like Petraeus, are saying, you know, what comes after America? Well, that's easy, North America. And he even references the North American Trade Union. So they see this as an accomplished fact. While we're just starting to realize, many of us in the public are starting to see the consequences of the North American Trade Union as we see these open borders, as people like Nancy Pelosi said, we just happen to have this border, these multiple communities that are separated by this border. The border doesn't really mean anything, essentially, is what she was saying. As we see the consequences of this and start to push back against it, many people in the public who have not been following it for decades, like the John Birch Society, they're working on the next stage of this. They're working on taking these regional trading groups and merging them together. So that's the way that they come up with a globalist regime, is through these trade agreements. So I'm very anxious to talk to him about that. We also have news about a geoengineering climate engineering conference that is going on in Berlin as we speak. This week, ending tomorrow, they have a conference on how they can change the climate. Now, we've talked about chemtrails. Alex had a geoengineering special report just last week. We're going to look at a couple of the papers that are going to be presented at this conference, that are being presented, one of them today. A very interesting revelation of what they are up to. We're also going to look more in depth at the Pentagon's 1033 program, the consequences of that. That's the program where they give the equipment to all these local police departments. That's what's fundamentally behind this militarization of the police. And as you're looking at this right now, we've got a article that's up on InfoWars.com. This cop who's running around pointing guns in people's faces. I mean, he's like some kind of a panicked animal. They're just running around with a gun in people's faces. And when they ask him what he's doing, all he says is the F word. You know, I'm going to blow your effing head off. And when they ask him his name, he says, he basically repeats that. Very, very serious to see this kind of thing happening, this kind of unprofessional, provocative behavior. Anybody that's handled a gun knows that you don't point it at somebody you don't plan to shoot. That's a very serious thing, but that's becoming standard operating procedure right now. Where's that coming from? Well, it's being driven by these programs where they give this equipment out to people, get them all hyped up. It's kind of like when you have a homeschool. As we were doing that, we were looking at the curriculum. What were we to teach if we're going to pass the test? They can try to drive what you teach in school by setting up the test. They don't have to dictate the curriculum to you directly. They can set it up by setting some standards that you have to get your kids to follow through. That's the same thing they're doing with the police as they train them in this militarized program. One aspect that you probably don't realize is that part of the military surplus program involved giving equipment to firefighters. That was something that went on for several decades before they ever started giving it to the police departments. That went back to right after World War II. They recently tried to shut that down. There was a massive pushback against that. We're going to talk about that. And we have news about the Kardashians. That's right. Right here on InfoWars, we're going to cover some stuff about the Kardashians. They wanted to get into Plum Island, so we're going to talk about that. DARPA's got a new bid out, $150,000, if you can track the spread of chikungunya fever. And also new vaccines on the horizon. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Wednesday, August 20th, 2014. We're going to be having a conversation with Arthur Thompson, the CEO of the John Birch Society. He's going to be joining us live in studio in the third hour. He's got a new book out, International Merger by Foreign Entanglements. It's exactly, as I pointed out in the last segment, what is happening. They create these regional trade groups. And now, as we see the effects 20 years on into NAFTA, they're working on creating the next step, and that is to combine NAFTA, the North American Union, combine that with the European Union, and also combine the North American Union with the Asian trade groups. That's the way they're going to get a globalist control through the corporations, giving them powers that are above what government has. We've also got some breaking news about a geoengineering conference that's going on in Berlin right now. It ends tomorrow. There's going to be a couple of interesting papers we're going to go over there. Of course, Alex Jones had a geoengineering special report last week, and we're going to look at what they're up to. And actually, one of these papers, one of the scientists has a little bit of problem with what they're planning to do, or what we would say they're already doing. You know, that's the sort of thing that you see happening with the surveillance state. For many years, we told you what they were doing. They pretended they weren't doing it right up until the Snowden documents came out. Of course, the head of the NSA was saying, oh, no, we're not spying on anybody. And of course, the senator who asked him a question knew that they were. He had seen the classified documents. He knew he was lying. That's why he was trying to get him to tell the truth under oath, but they don't do that either. So what they do is they do these things. They do it secretly. When you talk about it, they say, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, these people, Alex Jones, the John Birch Society, all these guys are just into conspiracies. We have an interesting clip that we're going to play you, too, to put things into perspective. Going back to a Larry McDonald appearance on CNN Crossfire with Pat Buchanan and Tom Brayden. You may not know Tom Brayden, but he was someone who was very instrumental in the creation of the CIA. He was someone who created Operation Mockingbird. And he was somebody who had a very large presence in the media. So it was an interesting three-way conversation there between those guys just before Larry McDonald, who was a congressman and also a past president of the John Birch Society. We're going to play some excerpts of that when we talk to Arthur Thompson. We're also going to be going to our InfoWars reporters in Ferguson, Missouri. We're going to look more in depth at this Pentagon 1033 program, which is militarizing our local police departments. You know, that was something else that the John Birch Society for years talked about decades ago. They were talking about local control of the police and how important it was that that not turn into federal control. Well, now it's actually moving beyond that. We've got the UN talking about how they want to essentially set up standards for the way the police are going to interact with people. I think they need to be controlled locally. We need to find some method to control the police. Frankly, I think with the federal involvement, they have gone out of control. So we're going to look at that program, and there's something that I don't think many of you have heard about. It's something that was only covered by local stations when it first came out. Back in June, the Pentagon momentarily said that they were going to stop a program of giving military surplus hardware to fire departments. This is a program that had been in effect since the 1950s, shortly after World War II ended, and they started bringing back surplus equipment. They started giving it to fire departments a long time before they started giving it to police departments. They didn't start the police program until the mid-90s. So for 40 years, they were giving surplus equipment to small fire departments, rural fire departments that had to deal with massive wildfires but had a very small population base, could not afford to get this equipment. It was a very useful, very productive thing to do with that equipment. They decided they were going to stop that abruptly at the end of June. There was a major backlash because, you know, firemen don't take things sitting down. They get very active about things. So they got in touch with their congressmen, with their senators. They pushed that back. But for about 3 weeks, people were talking about this program, how it had existed, how necessary and vital it was, how so many of the fires were put out by local people. But the Pentagon wants to militarize the police and do it so quickly that they even wanted to cut this little bit of equipment that they were giving to fire stations. So we're going to talk about that, what's in that program. And we also have Kardashian news. They tried to get onto Plum Island, And they were told, no, sorry, it's kind of secretive here. We're also going to talk about a new DARPA contract putting an award out, $150,000 for people who can predict how the chikungunya fever is going to move across the United States. They want to track this as they would track a pandemic. Anytime DARPA gets involved in something, you need to watch it carefully. So we're going to talk about the new chikungunya vaccine. It's a new mechanism. It's a very different way that they've got of trying to control the disease. And it also applies to the new Ebola vaccine. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Plum Island. We're going to talk about some diseases that are put out by tick-borne that tick vector to put this out. So we've got some interesting news on that front. But the top story is what's going on in Ferguson right now. And Alex is going to be joining us in a few minutes to talk about this, because last night our reporters got some amazing footage. We have an article up on InfoWars right now about a Ferguson cop who is pointing a gun at journalists and saying, "I'm going to kill you." He's pointing the gun right in their face. And he keeps doing this, and he's just kind of walking around the crowd. If you're watching us, you can see the B-roll there. I don't know how much of this we can play, guys. Can we play some of this, or is it all profanity?
It's all there's too much profanity.
Okay, we're going to have a bloop version for you. But right now, I'll give you the gist of it if you're listening on the radio. This is Paul Joseph Watson's article. He said, "Shocking footage out of Ferguson, Missouri, shows a police officer pointing his gun directly at protesters and the press while remarking, 'I'm going to effing kill you.'" And the journalist says, he's got his gun raised, and Joe Biggs was standing right there and said, "His gun is pointed." And the journalist says, "My hands are up, bro, my hands are up." And the cop says, "I'm going to effing kill you, get back. And he goes, "You're going to kill him?" says another individual. "Did he just threaten to kill me?" And then when they ask the cop for his name, he says, "Go F yourself." And so that's now become a hashtag on Twitter. Hashtag officer go F yourself. They spell it out. And we've got a couple of tweets here from Joe Biggs. He said, "I witnessed a cop stick his M4 in a journalist's face and say, 'I'll effing kill you.' A female officer had to pull him out of the young man's face." Mikhail Thalen tweeted that he had three riot cops freaking out and pointing shotguns at him when he got isolated behind a building after everything started happening. Well, this is something that is very new. I can remember... it's probably been about 6 years ago when we adopted my daughter from China. And when we were in it was a massive crowded retail street. I mean, it was totally packed. And you can't imagine it unless you've been to China or let's say New York on St. Patrick's Day parade. I mean, it's that kind of a crowd. Shoulder to shoulder, everybody is packed. They pulled up in an armored vehicle and this security guard gets out. He's got armor. He's got a helmet, kind of like what you see the police wearing now, and a shotgun. And he levels the shotgun. He doesn't have the muzzle up. He doesn't have the muzzle down. He points it at the crowd, a shotgun. And we were right there. And I could not believe they would be that irresponsible. I said, "I've never seen anything like this." And of course, that is what's become standard operating procedure for our police now. That's been happening all week. Joining us now is Alex Jones to comment on this. Alex.
That's right, David. As I announced yesterday in the third hour on air, I've gotten so upset by all of this that when I start having literal anger issues, so that's not fake on air when I'm blowing up, folks, but that's going on behind the scenes as well, because I'm so upset that I decided to just take a day off and get a lot of different errands and issues completed. They're more administrative around the office and the house. And then the reason I raise this personal point is it shows how serious all of this is, that never in almost 20 years on air, never have I had to actually just take myself off air, even though I wasn't making that big of a fool of myself on air. I was just getting so physically upset and disgusted that there's no point in just getting on air and venting a bunch of anger. And the lesson out of that is, I'm on one extreme getting so angry about things. Other people are on the other extreme, not caring or thinking they don't have any power. And then I watched the live streams last night. This is not a fake reality TV show. This is the real world and the end of our country basically collapsing. We're going to skip this network break, and I'm going to be gone by the bottom of the hour and turn it over to David Knight. But the reason I preface all of this with my own personal feelings on the subject is this is how a country dies. This is how tyranny comes in, by increment, by successive approximation. And then finally, they're not taking baby steps. They're not taking giant leaps. They are jumping light years ahead in destroying our republic right in front of us. And the police, the looters, the demonstrators, the media, the American people, we're all being manipulated by very sophisticated psyops. So I wanted to take off today so that last night and this morning I could really just sit back, read the news, take my time trying to figure out what's going on exactly, and to really try to gauge the larger situation. And stepping back and watching the HD reports filed at Infowars.com and that are on the YouTube channel and on PrisonPlanet.tv, it is just so over-the-top, incredible, the picture that has emerged clearly now several weeks into this Ferguson crisis. The feds have been there since day one. The feds are undoubtedly manipulating this through CNN, MSNBC, the new Black Panther Party useful idiots, and the Ford Foundation type operatives that are on the ground there. We're going to get into some shocking evidence of that here in just a moment. The police are clearly being given orders to brutalize the press and to treat the press with hatred and to assault the press and to threaten to kill the press. In fact, I may just have to order the reporters back because they've got a lot of courage and they keep going up to the very front lines where reporters are being arrested left and right in front of them and brutalized for no reason. Our guys are now there standing there shooting HD video as the cop sticks the M4, M16 variant to the chest of reporters and points it at them as well and says, "I will effing kill you." With an arrogant, belligerent, that doesn't have a mask on, anything. No one's arguing with him. No one's telling him he's a piece of crap. No one is antagonizing him. They are targeting the press. And in the Joe Biggs video that Marcos Morales uploaded in the middle of the night last night, police arresting journalists in Ferguson, Missouri, that's the headline. And I sat here this morning watching it. I cannot figure out a way to describe what is in this five-minute video. This video, and there's a whole bunch of them, I can't quit watching them. Because as an investigator, as somebody that's been doing this for 20 years that knows how provocateurs work, who's gone up against them scores of times, I've had the Army try to set fires in Florida and blame it on me. I have been chased through swamps by dune buggies. I mean, I'm just telling people, that's in police state too. I've dealt with this over and over again. I've dealt with this trying to build a memorial church in Waco. I've dealt with the Klan threatening to kill me and finding out they're federal agents and informants. So when I tell people something, I'm going off experience. We saw the feds dressed up like anarchists, also running anarchists under them in Seattle in 99 at WTO. We've caught them in Ottawa, Canada at the G20. We've caught them in Pittsburgh. It is so criminal to watch the police run a false flag. I've now analyzed these videos, and in the same video that's on the YouTube channel, I don't even think we've got it on the website yet, titled Police Arresting Journalists in Ferguson, I cannot even come up with a proper headline for this video because the guys are filing this report, and it's narrated by Biggs, but they just glaze over the cop pointing a gun at him and threatening to kill him. And I'm not saying that's bad they glaze over it. They glaze over all these other reporters being brutalized and attacked. And then right there, Biggs clearly completed the mission and discovered a cache of Molotov cocktails deployed in an area strategically, and I've seen this over and over again, by the feds, guaranteed. He goes to all the police, tells them where it's at. They look at him and then are clearly in the know and say, get out of here and do nothing. And then you see the press conference and the gun and the same Molotov cocktail that they had in the press conference two nights ago. I'm here to tell you, looking at these videos, that the evidence is all there. We now know this may have been staged from the very beginning. This whole thing is a psyop, just like the IS terrorists chopping the U.S. reporter's head off. That's a real reporter. That's probably a real beheading. ISIS is real. IS is real. It's called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. It was allowed and armed by our filthy, degenerate, wicked, globalist, occupied government to attack Syria. And they're on the news this morning separately. I mean, we're just living a psyop, saying we've got to go back into Syria. IS is using eastern Syria to go into western Iraq when our government set them up and turned them loose. It's like throwing a baby with cuts on its back into a pool of starving piranhas and then saying, oh my God, we've got to do something for the baby. I mean, you can see the problem reaction solution. And just like the cops have been caught under Fed control in every major event provocateuring to give them the fake moral high ground, there's that famous video from 5 years ago where the government even did an investigation. The RCMP had to admit that they did it. They had huge, you know, cops in anarchist garb beating up other cops, and you could tell that it was about 95% fake. They were actually hitting them pretty hard, but the cops were winking, and they were all wearing the same boots, and they got caught. That was in the Toronto Star. You got caught. They did provocateuring at the G20 in London, and then a guy delivering newspapers and chewing gum to the corner store showed him his ID. Said, yeah, no, I'm delivering food into the conference area, into one of the gift shops, and they just beat his brains out in front of everybody, and then said that he had assaulted the police until a video got released, and they just beat his brains out in cold-blooded murder. And so what you've got is cold-blooded murderers being hired for the police departments, cold-blooded bullies, and unstable mental patients who basically shouldn't have a job pushing a mop, are being put in and promoted to create this culture now of a full conversion of the police into a vicious, hateful, occupying army who are targeting the media on purpose. Now, folks, we can keep more than one thought in our minds at the same time. We can chew bubble gum and you know, trim the hedges or walk and chew bubble gum. It doesn't mean the thugs are good. It doesn't mean the looters are good. We're there exposing them and reporting on them throwing rocks at the police. And they're not being arrested when they do it. We have video of them throwing rocks at police. I'm going to explain this. In the same area, they're brutalizing journalists and targeting them with a hatred as if journalists are all convicted child molesters. The journalists are professional in almost every case while they're being assaulted by out-of-control police attacking the First Amendment, attacking all of our freedoms. This is vomitous. Then you expand from that to people throwing bricks at the police, and the cops stand there like they're ready for it and just let it bounce off their body armor. And then you got Molotov cocktails cached right over by an area by the police. Biggs discovers them, goes to them, and the cops look like they have an adrenaline rush, like they've just been caught in something. So they're clearly working with the new Black Panther people to stir things up. They are clearly working with other Justice Department provocateurs that are on the ground. I don't think the police themselves are involved, but they know. They're not stupid. This is disgusting. And this whole Ferguson thing is a laboratory to shoot HD video and reports to train departments all over the country. The feds do the training. They send in the armored vehicles. They give the state the money. They give them the army manuals to point guns at people and to shoot protesters in the future lethally to stop peaceful protesters as a psyop. That's in the new army manual. This is all earth-shaking. Of course they'll throw Molotov cocktails at themselves to stir this up and to give the police state the moral high ground if they'll have official manuals. April of this year, released last Friday, saying they will kill in a crowd of peaceful demonstrators. They will shoot for the chest, the testicles, the spine, the heart, depending on if they want to wound someone to scare the crowd or if they want to kill. And it gives authorization, not in law, but in doctrine, to murder Americans en masse. And they will do this when the collapse comes and when cities are burning. It will be legitimate when the military goes out there and mows down looters. But remember who lit the fuse. Remember who started the whole thing to where they will make us, the middle class, beg for martial law, beg them to save us. And when the police fail and when they fall, they're going to bring in the UN troops. And I was told this by FBI agents and Army generals and Air Force generals, and I was told this by CIA people, all told me the same thing from the time that I was a little kid right up until my 19 years on air, talking to these people on air, Marine Corps colonels, you name it, you've heard them all. And I'm telling you, I was a little kid listening to FBI people my family knew, and John Birchers my family knew, and people that worked in secret operations, some of my family, all knew about this and said this was the plan of the globalists to bring America down. And folks, we are actually beginning to see it right now unfold in front of everyone's face. Now, if they fail, if we expose this and they back off, that's good. People say, oh, where's the martial law? You're seeing martial law beta tested when they are targeting reporters. We now have it on video while people throw rocks at the cops. Okay, I'm going to explain that again. They are clearly being told to stand down while this goes on. I'm going to come back and finish up and throw the baton to David Knight. The reporters are coming up in the next hour. But we've got to go over all these videos and name these. And I'm not knocking the crew for not giving it a powerful name. I don't know how you come up with something powerful enough to describe what's on this video. Evidence of provocateurs, the police threatening to kill people. We'll play that clip when we come back. Threatening to shoot journalists, threatening to murder them. I will, quote, kill you. Premeditated.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. Take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
To the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight in studio. We were just talking to Alex Jones, and it's absolutely amazing that we would have to be concerned enough to consider bringing back our journalists. Why? Because they're threatened by the police. Because it's the police that are pointing guns in journalists' faces, threatening to kill them. These kinds of rules of engagement are totally out of control. It's not only is it unprofessional, but it's amazingly provocative and dangerous to see the police doing this. But of course, we just had a couple of days ago a document written in April of this year that Paul Joseph Watson published on an article showing that they are gaming for shooting unarmed protesters. Exactly what we saw the first couple of nights that our reporters were in Ferguson, Missouri. If you remember, I think we're the only ones to have reported it. We actually showed video of the police not only leveling their guns, but having their sniper rifles trained on individuals and lighting them up with the laser sights on their rifles, clearly showing that they had their sniper rifles pointed at these people and were ready to fire on them. That is exactly what they are planning to do in this document. They talk about taking out the leaders of peaceful protests, eliminating those guys with snipers. And that's what we saw a year ago. A document was leaked from the FBI saying that they were looking at using suppressed sniper fire to take out the leaders of the Occupy movement. And it's absolutely amazing to see that. Alex, we had a little bit of phone problem. I think you're back with us now. Go ahead.
Yes. I just want to be clear here that there is an organized doctrine to kill reporters and kill the leaders of peaceful demonstrations and movements. They want to set the precedent on inner city people and folks that have been demonized for whatever reason. sell the police state on Muslims. Then they sell it for inner-city blacks. The final enemy in all the training and all the preparations is gun owners and everyone's Bill of Rights, everyone's Constitution. But if people want to put it in racial terms, it is the war on white people that members of the Senate and the House have talked about. The open race war pimping by MSNBC, CNN, and others run directly by the Justice Department. And we have massive evidence in the video retitled, Ferguson Police Threatened to Kill Journalist. We have the video of them threatening to kill the journalist. That is inside that six-minute video. We have Biggs discovering the Molotov cocktails and trying to tell police, and nothing being done. We have just massive evidence, and sitting back and looking at it, it's incredible. Now, we haven't played the clip yet of the police officer threatening to kill people, threatening to kill journalists, because he cusses. NPR, or the PBS channels would air this because it's documentary. It doesn't violate the FCC if it's for documentary court-style purposes. I actually know the rulings, but we're not. We're going to beep it. So as soon as we have that, it's just about a 20-second clip, we will play that. And they just march up and they say, you know, I will effing kill you. I will effing shoot you.
Alex, we have the clip ready.
Okay, good. We have the clip. We're going to play that clip. And again, there's just so much evidence, so much proof for all the limited staff trying to go through this. That's why it's so important for people to buy the products at InfoWarsLife.com and InfoWarsStore.com, because then I can hire a couple more people to run the computers, to pull up the news articles, to pull up the clips, to watch the clips, to put them on air. There's so much to digest here. We would have more reporters to be able to be covering all of this. And I'm not complaining. InfoWars has grown, but I need to hire five or six more reporters. I need to hire more print reporters. I need to hire more camera people, more video editors, more people to look at the footage, because we are just absolutely working as hard as we can. And I'm just here having a personal discussion with the listeners out there about my frustrations, and because we're all in this together. And it is so horrible and so horrific to see this happening. So we're going to play that clip of the police officer, bigger than Dallas. People can watch it unedited at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, saying, I will kill you, I will shoot you, and grabbing and slamming reporters to the ground that are doing nothing. We have clip after clip of my reporters in the middle of all this, and Biggs, Joe Biggs, our reporter, finding the Molotov cocktails, trying to go get the police to look at them. He dare not walk over with them. A whole box of them stashed and ready, the same brand that the police have claimed that they found one undetonated and showed on the news. Clearly provocateur, doing nothing about a stash of Molotov cocktails. I mean, that's a national news story. Stash of Molotov cocktails found. You're going to hear from Joe Biggs a full breakdown of everything that happened with his report with Marcos Morales, Kit Daniels, Mikhail Phelan, who they also pointed shotguns at and threatened to kill. I mean, this is getting crazy, ladies and gentlemen. So let's go ahead and play the clip from last night. Here it is.
My hands are up, bro. My hands are up.
You're gonna kill him.
What's your name? Your name's Joe Albrecht. Hello, officer.
The guy pointing a gun at people right now for no reason.
He threatened to kill my friend.
You're a real man.
Yes, I'm
like,
yeah.
He's gonna kill us. I can't believe that. Now, again, that's footage shot by somebody else that was there. We have it in HD, and that's going to get uploaded by our exhausted crew there in Ferguson, Missouri, and is going to get out to everybody. But just what David Knight was saying. You can disagree with Occupy Wall Street and their socialist views, but they were right that it's the mega banks running the country. They were wrong to call it capitalism because these people are the opposite of capitalists. They're monopoly thugs who are waging war against real prosperity. But even if they were outright communist, when it was declassified last year, this is mainstream national news, the plan to execute the peaceful leaders of Occupy Wall Street, that means the ones the feds didn't control, because it turned out the Justice Department basically started it, tried to run it, it failed. They tried to organize like an Arab Spring here. Even Al Gore said we need an Arab Spring here in America. They create the crisis, then they give the police the training to go out and kill everybody. So understand, ladies and gentlemen, that they are not going after the thugs in Ferguson. They are not going after the gangsters, the gangbangers. They are not going after the Molotov cocktail throwers or people throwing rocks. People are throwing rocks, and 20 feet away there's were journalists being attacked by the police. And the police, some of them say, hey, InfoWars, we love you. Some of the riot cops and some of the National Guard, some of that's on video. But the majority of them just see reporters and they'll see like an old, 65-year-old guy with a pad of paper and a camera around his neck, clearly a journalist, wearing a vest. They'll just run over and slam the guy on the ground. I mean, it's bizarre. Never has this happened in America. They don't even do this in North Korea. They would just come and get the journalist and take him away and then do stuff behind closed doors. They're doing it out in the open. This is beyond North Korea. I'm going to explain this again. They have never put out public documents, public, for full unlimited distribution by the Department of Defense, Office of the Secretary of the Army, saying to all the people being given riot control training, police, military, you name it, this is where you shoot people to kill, quote, peaceful demonstrators, quote. See, I've been shell-shocked for 2 days since this broke. That's why I couldn't even hardly talk yesterday. I was stuttering. I was getting angry. I was running around yelling in the halls because my normal instincts, folks, is we are in crisis level. But that's healthy. It is normal to get upset about this. So pray for InfoWars. We're under a lot of stress. Pray for our reporters, but also the people that are having to watch this and look at it and also be trying to tell our reporters what to do. It's a very frustrating thing to have the responsibility to know that we're at the very cutting edge of this and to want to do a perfect job. Growing up, I always wondered why sports stars and adventurers and people that push themselves to the edge would get so angry with themselves and were never satisfied. That's a mark of greatness, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why everybody up there running the show today, David Knight, his family, what they've gone through to move down here and sell everything they had in North Carolina, all of my reporters, from Ja'Kari Jackson to Leanne McAdoo to Marcos Morales to Rob Jacobson to Anthony Gucciardi, everyone in that office, from the shipping department to the customer service to the graphics people to the writers, Don Salazar, Kurt Demo, Kit Daniels, all of them. This is an incredible team, and I realize we need to celebrate the fact that we're blessed, we're in a very important position. We're also under globalist attack, spiritual attack, economic attack, but all Americans are under attack. And I want to just tell everybody something. I appreciate the listeners, and I feel a kinship and a brotherhood and a sisterhood with all of you. We are family. This is real. This is epic. This is happening. This is beyond journalism. This is just humans seeing tyranny unfold. If they declared martial law, if they had the NSA spying on us illegally, if they funded radical Islam and ISIS, if they turned over Christian areas and let ISIS murder everyone with U.S. weapons, if all this evil happened like Fast and Furious and Benghazi and Obamacare and 2+2=5 and Agenda 21 and Cloward and Piven, if this all happened, would someone stand up? Would someone do something? And yes, we are doing something. I feel like in that movie that just came out with The Rock, it's pretty good for one of those entertaining movies, Hercules, went and saw some of my friends, when he really wasn't the mythical Hercules, but at the time that he needed to jump over that statue and crush the enemy. He didn't jump the whole thing over. He just found a weak spot and pushed as hard as he could and did it, like a woman picking a car up off her child. And I'm telling you, folks, I can't lift this whole thing, but all of us together can lift it, and that's why I get so angry, because I know we've had victories. I know we've changed history. I know we've informed tens of millions. I want to inform billions. I want to stop these people. I don't want us to convert to a total tyranny. I want the cancer viruses out of the vaccines. I don't want them dumbing our people down. I don't want them coming after our guns. I don't want them to take full control of this society. They will do it. We are in the hands of incredibly evil social engineers who have used toxic culture to turn the public into artificial, sociopathic, narcissistic mental patients. Mental illness is just raging. Disease is raging. All the statistics show we are redlining. Humanity is in a great test, in a huge crisis right now. And it's time for us to get on our knees and ask God for guidance, and to also remember our ancestors and to gain strength from everything they went through, to understand this is the animating contest of liberty. And it is disgusting and painful and horrible to see those police acting like demonic animals. It is horrible and disgusting to see those crowds of surly, entitled punks acting like absolute scum criminals and filth and racist trash, you know, just spewing all this division and garbage to play us off against each other. But we can transcend it by recognizing it, by pointing our finger at it, and by saying it's wrong and a fraud. So that's what I'm telling you here today. As I took off today because I wanted to get clarity and pull back from this, and all of us have to do that. We have to get outside their manipulation, see it from the outside, realize what it is, and then intellectually fight it, but also use our passion and our emotion scientifically to fuel the awakening, like a transmission, or it's a spirit, just like a pep rally of liberty, and saying no to the police state and no to the NSA as all of the evil comes out of the closet. Forced inoculation. Your kids don't belong to you. They belong to the state. You didn't build your business. Somebody else did that. They are just throwing it in our face, trying to antagonize us, trying to cause a war, trying to cause a civil war, trying to order the police to do things they know will turn the whole country against them. How stupid are these cops following these orders? Well, they were picked because they would follow orders, and I don't hate them. I love those stupid rioters, morons brought up for the television from birth, eating, you know, Captain Crunch. I feel sorry for those cops, most of them brought up probably in broken families, looking for manhood, looking for a gang, going joining the police department, thinking they're going to find their daddy there. I'm here to tell you right now, you're going to find your daddy when you find George Washington and the honorable men that came before us. That's our daddy. Our daddy is not the New World Order and a bunch of black uniforms and a bunch of cowardice and a bunch of weakness. And America is better than that, and we can turn the tide against this if we recognize what it is and vomit this poison up out of our guts. Now, I'm going to turn it over to you, but I'm just telling you, it's like a race car that's got all this incredible horsepower that can blow an engine. That's why we're so frustrated at InfoWars, because I see all these incredible videos, all this incredible evidence. We don't even have a way to digest it or get it all out to everybody. That's why we need your help with articles. We need your help to point stuff out in our videos. We need your help to help us when we're wrong and help us when we're right, and to financially support us and tell 10 people, 20 people, 50 people, 100 people. In fact, I don't want you to tell your friends and family about the show. I want you to tell 100 people about the show, about InfoWars.com, at the supermarket and at church and at work and in the parking lot and at red lights everywhere and in banner hangs and everywhere else. And you don't want to promote InfoWars? Promote something else. Just get out there. Get up off your butts. Take action against this, and we can turn the tide. We can save the republic, because the alternative is absolute technotronic technocracy, scientific dictatorship, a boot stomping on the human face forever, trampling and being trampled upon, a world that becomes more barbarous, more ugly, more sick, more short-lived, quoting from their Bible, 1984. This is the absolute enemy preparing for civil war in America, missing nuclear weapons. You can see what they're planning. Obama says he's worried about a nuke in New York because they'll be the ones that detonate it to bring in total control. This isn't a game, ladies and gentlemen. This is for real. David Knight, I'm going to turn it over to you. God bless you all. It is time to decide which side we are all on. I'm going to throw it back to the InfoWars Command Center in Central Texas and our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri. They're all coming up. Stay with us, and never forget, if you're listening or watching this transmission, you are the resistance.
Yes, to just reiterate what Alex was talking about, they're openly talking about this kind of behavior now. The fact that they would leak this just a couple of months after having this document, that would have normally been kept secret. Stay with us. We're going to talk about that in more detail right after the break.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin, and we're going to be joined in just a few minutes with our crew that is in Ferguson, Missouri. They're going to give us a live update as to what's going on there. And of course, there was a lot of news last night. There's a video up right now showing a cop walking through a crowd yelling, "I'm going to effing kill you," pointing guns at the people in their faces, leveled in their faces. That is something we have not seen before. There's absolutely no reticence from this guy. As Alex pointed out, he's not wearing a mask. He's not trying to hide his identity. And just as we saw from this report that was released, that was written only back in April of this year, only 4 months ago, there is no longer any attempt to conceal this kind of militarized martial law techniques that we see happening here in Ferguson. This is in-your-face tyranny. The mask has really come off. The Onion is talking about this. They have pros and cons of militarizing the police, and it's almost, you can't go over the top with this. But here's a couple of things they've got here. They got modern law enforcement. Here's one of the pros. Modern law enforcement simply can't do their job properly by relying on handguns, tasers, and tear gas alone. And now local journalists can capture the fog of war without leaving the United States. It'd be a nice surprise treat for veterans to see weapons that they used in war now pop up on their own hometown streets. And they say as cons, the military-style helmets limit your peripheral vision while firing indiscriminately into crowds. And this kind of equipment could potentially be abused if put in lesser hands than America's historically honest and virtuous police departments. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're putting massive amounts of equipment into the hands of the police department, and it is growing exponentially. The 1033 program of the Pentagon, just this last year, the Washington Post reports they gave away nearly $500 million worth of military gear to local law enforcement last year. Are they not going to use it? Of course they're going to use it. We're told that we're paranoid when we say that the NSA is listening to everyone, is monitoring our conversations. They lie about it before Congress, and then it comes out they really are doing it. Obama says, signs the NDAA and says that he's going to have indefinite detention of people in America because, of course, we are officially a war zone. And then he says, don't worry, I'm not going to use it. Well, we've heard that before. Now we see they really are using it. As they pointed out here, this 1033 program has transferred more than $4.3 billion since 1997, but $500 million happened in just the last year. It's truly accelerating. Now, this is an interesting story, and we pointed this out the other night on the nightly news. We talked about some of the things that could possibly be included in that. And they said that back in June, Alan Grayson authored a bill, went before the House to try to stop this. 85% of the Congress wanted to not stop it. They wanted to go through this. They have a breakdown on this, again, in the Washington Post. They show 210 out of the GOP, 145 Democrats want the police departments to have this kind of militarized equipment. Only 19 Republicans and 43 Democrats, only 15% of the House said no. Now, what did they say no to? Well, they said no to giving them things like this: unmanned aerial vehicles, armored vehicles, grenade launchers, silencers, toxicological agents, including chemical agents, biological agents, associated equipment, launch vehicles, guided missiles. They're talking about giving this to police departments, ballistic missiles, rockets, torpedoes, bombs, mines, or nuclear weapons. That was what was in his bill. That is not what's in the 1033 program. They leave that open. They say that it's against the law for them to transfer hazardous material, but they say that they will work with you if you need it. So they leave the door open to it. But let me make this clear. Even though it doesn't explicitly say that in the 1033 program, the congressmen, 85% of the congressmen, both parties, said they were fine if the Pentagon wanted to give nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons to the local police. They had no problem with it. They voted against that kind of prohibition.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin. We're going to be joined in just a moment with our reporters in Ferguson, Missouri. We're going to be joined in the next hour with the CEO from the John Birch Society, Arthur Thompson. He's going to be talking about his new book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglement. So stay with us. That's going to be a very interesting hour. As I said, we're going to be going to our reporters who are in Ferguson, Missouri. As we look at this buildup, as this militarization of the police, as we see the videos that went up last night with the threats against the reporters with loaded guns in people's faces who are standing there with a camera, peaceful photojournalists standing there with a camera, getting a loaded gun in their face with a cop swearing, "I'm going to effing shoot you." I mean, the guy is out of control. Why do we allow people like this to be in the police department? Can we get control of our local police? It is something that is being driven by the federal government. This is coming from the training, from the equipment that they're sending them from the Pentagon as part of this 1033 program. Just last June, Alan Grayson, Democrat from Florida, had a bill that would prohibit this transfer of material. And among the things that he would prohibit, not just the over-the-top MRAPs and Bearcats and grenade launchers and armored vehicles, no, he would also, listed in here as prohibitions, would be things like chemical agents, biological agents, assorted equipment, even nuclear weapons. He had that whole list in there. And guess what? 85% of the Congress, the vast majority of both parties, said, no, we don't want to prohibit any of that stuff from being given to the cops, including nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. Now, if you look at the 1033 site, it says, why is hazardous material not authorized for transfer from the DLA Disposition Services field activity? So it sounds at first like, in their FAQ, like they're not going to send this equipment there. Then they say that the Law Enforcement Support Office would handle that on a case-by-case basis. So if you need nuclear, biological, chemical, or toxicological agents to use on the citizens of your hometown, you just need to talk to your Law Enforcement Support Office. They will handle that for you. That's something that takes a little bit more forms to fill out, I guess. But 85% of the Congress didn't have a problem with that. They didn't want to shut that down. Let's go to our reporters now in Ferguson, Missouri.
Joe Biggs here. Actually, I'm in downtown St. Louis. We got to pick up a little bit of equipment. Infocom. Last night, David, was the craziest night thus far. Although tear gas and flashbangs weren't used, last night was the first time I actually thought I would be killed.
Wow.
Last night was complete and total lawlessness, chaos on both sides, agent provocateurs in the area. We got there and they had moved the media area. When I first got there, it had been to the left of the McDonald's. They completely tore that down. It was no longer set up. So the crew and I went and walked around and we saw a bunch of the media vehicles staged on the left side of the road, but they didn't have any tape and there was no security around them last night whatsoever. Instead, the actual civilians, the protesters, were able to walk behind and get behind that area. And a lot of the things I noticed, I was walking down the road, I looked under this bin right beside the road, and there were bottles stored under it. And I was like, man, this is not good. I was like, I'm just going to go and talk to one of these officers and let them know, because if something happens with this, it's going to cause chaos, and it's going to go back to a complete and total war zone again. So I went up to numerous officers, said, hey, just so you guys know, heads up, I've seen a bunch of bottles stored in this one area, the same kind. They're laying under there, and you guys might want to do something about that. Oh, okay, thank you. And then just turns around and turns back on me. I went to another one. I said, hey, I just told another guy he's not taking this seriously. There's a bunch of stuff over here. Y'all need to look at it. Once again, didn't care. They were more worried about what we were doing and not worried about what was going to happen to spark violence out there whatsoever.
Yeah, they're very concerned about being photographed. There was an article on Reason.com asking, why haven't we seen any aerial footage of this? We've seen all kinds of graphics showing where this area is and showing where the police are here. But typically in a news scenario like this, you usually got aerial footage of helicopters. And they pointed out, well, they grounded everybody after they said a police helicopter was shot at. Yet the police helicopters are still flying. And are the journalists at any more danger in a helicopter thousands of feet above the ground than they are when the police point loaded guns in their face and threaten to kill them?
Well, last night, Kit saw somebody who was began to throw rocks, and the protesters turned on him. You can see the video about that. This guy was from out of town. He was a provocateur trying to cause violence in that area between the peaceful protests and the police officers. The guys ran behind the media. Some rubber bullet rounds were fired, and everybody got tense. The police started standing up, and I'm sitting on the side of the road. I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. And all of a sudden, I see this officer run up to the a camera guy and puts the M4 right in front of his face. He says, I'll even kill you. And then he's like, don't do anything. And he just starts screaming. Do what?
Man, that's amazing. Yeah, we played that several times. We had to bleep that out. And it's absolutely.
But then I walked up to him, and he pointed the gun at me, and I'm sitting there filming. I'm like, "Hey, what's going on?" And he's got the gun at my chest. I mean, this guy was so hot-headed; he was ready to snap. It took a female officer to come over and grab him, saying, "What are you doing?" and pulled him out of the area. The
Just
guy
amazing.
Was out of his mind.
And that's exactly what people need to take a look at this on YouTube.
The guy wouldn't give his name; he wouldn't give his anything. The guy said, "What's your name?" And he told him to go F himself. So now the guy on Twitter. Is officer go F yourself. It's all over the internet now.
What really is scary is to watch this and to see the freeze frame where you can see the expression on the guy's face. I mean, he is clearly out of control, clearly afraid, and that's where you have the out of control shootings. This is the kind of spirit that we see that's causing these types of incidents that trigger things like this Michael Brown shooting. It's the training, the lack of training and the kind of rules of engagement that they're promoting. We've got Alex Jones joining us on the line. Let's go to Alex and get his comments.
I want to go back to the reporters here in a moment, but again, I'm here monitoring the situation. You know, you have your guests coming up, but we need to just look at the big picture here. Okay? We need to understand they shot someone else yesterday. We don't know what really happened with that. This is continuing to escalate. The Justice Department under Obama has a history of provocateuring things. Joe Biggs found a cache of the same Molotov cocktails that the police were showing the media 2 days before and would not go get the cache of Molotov cocktails that were literally 50 yards from him and looked guilty whenever Biggs was explaining what was going on. This fits in with them not going after people that throw bricks at them, not going after people that throw Molotov cocktails at them, but attacking the reporters savagely. This is an attack on the First Amendment. Now, that's not why I called in. From day one, there have been scores of black witnesses who were there who said, and again, the police are not bringing these people on the news. The police are not releasing the full reports. That's why we've had cops calling in saying, yeah, that they need to release that. That's why something's going on here. And we thought it might have been because they were lying. But I, in the last 2 days, have found a bunch of videos. And I heard a police officer call in a few days ago from New York, and he said, you need to look these up. So I finally got around to it yesterday. I've checked the audio, and I've gone and found other witnesses, and it is the video, where the witnesses are talking about how he climbed up on the truck and basically, you know, went crazy attacking the police vehicle, ran away, the cop got out, told him stop, he turned and charged back. This is the Brown shooting, the 18-year-old guy that got shot a few weeks ago that started all this for your new listener. And these are eyewitnesses standing around talking because it was in a populated housing project area, and confirming what the police said. So again, why did they not then roll all these witnesses out? We know they've been interviewing them. Why have they basically had a response attacking the press day one? Because everybody keeps saying, the feds are coming, the feds are coming. Folks, we had reporters there by, what, the Monday after. So we had reporters there 3 days into this, okay, before anybody else was there, except the Washington Post and a few others. They were arresting reporters day one. When the police see reporters, they look like a badger hound, a dachshund that's trained to kill rats. Have you ever seen a dachshund? She's a rat, folks. It goes crazy. It goes into piranha mode. I mean, it's like they were trained to attack us. It's like a bear dog, you know, that's trained to attack bears or a, you know, blue cur, you know, grappling dog or whatever that's trained to go after wild hogs. They are just ready to attack, absolutely hate the media, when the media, day one, didn't do anything. So this is a psyop, undoubtedly. The evidence is really mounting now. And we know that MSNBC has been pushing the whole race war agenda. We're going to skip this network break. This is too important. But no more skipping breaks today or tomorrow, folks. I really shouldn't do this with the network. Just financially support us, though, folks. Support the sponsors. It's just this information is so incredibly key. So the name of the video that I hope you'll play later today, it's a minute and 22 seconds long. It's titled New Evidence. We need to get an article out on this. We need to get this video posted at InfoWars.com right now. We need to tweet this out right now. And we can write an article around it and the other witnesses. New evidence in Michael Brown's shooting. Witnesses confirm Brown rushed officer before being shot. This was posted yesterday. Only has 374 views. New evidence in Michael Brown's shooting. Witnesses confirm Brown rushed officer before being shot. Now, I know there's some other videos also shot by people saying the exact same thing. So, again, people like want to manipulate reality for what they want to believe. If the cop killed him in cold blood because they're training him to be mad dogs, then he should get in trouble. He should go to prison. But if the guy attacked him twice, he had a right to shoot him. I would have done the same thing. So why aren't they telling the truth here? I want to get back to Joe Biggs, Marcos Morales, and others and get their take on what's unfolding. But new evidence in Michael Brown's shooting. Witness confirms Brown rushed officer before being shot. We have the other video, a police threat to kill reporters, the six-minute report by Biggs that is very well done that shows the provocateuring. This is all going up on InfoWars.com. It's all being tweeted out at Real Alex Jones on this live Wednesday edition. I'm going to turn it over to you guys now, but I don't want to get caught in the minutia and the emotion of the police officer threatening to kill you guys and threatening to kill Mikhail Talon behind the mini mart. I understand. We know that happened. It's important. The video's in HD up on InfoWars.com. And you can hear it with all the cussing, and then it's congruent. You can understand it. It's very clear. I want to commend Biggs and all of you for having the stamina to not blow up in the face of this or to not just get exhausted and get a migraine headache. I do not want you guys, I'm saying this again, or I'm going to pull you guys out of there. I do not want you guys, I know you weren't in the front lines this time, they're just running over to you, threatening to kill you, but I just do not need you guys to get killed. And I'm telling you, if this continues, they're going to kill journalists, they're going to open up on a crowd. They've got a bunch of National Guard kids who look like they're 16 years old with Beretta 9mm on their side. This is escalating quickly. All sorts of anarchist, white meth head kids are now showing up from Chicago and places. This is about to get really bad. But I need you guys to pretty much operate. We've got Zoom cameras we can overnight to you. I just need you guys to start operating from a distance. I've seen Marcos Morales walking right up to the police line when they're arresting people. Very brave, but we just don't need that. And, I mean, this is getting out of control. This is martial law. This is police trained to hate journalists, trained to kill journalists during martial law. Just like in Baghdad, Reuters got targeted there in 2003 by the Abrams tanks blowing up the floors that Reuters was in. This is just absolutely out of control, and this is the barbarism of our society as we descend into this immoral garbage. They're preparing us for a civil war. There's no doubt this is a martial law beta test. So Joe Biggs, other reporters, I want you guys for the rest of the hour with David Knight to break all this down. But again, please don't forget to go to InfoWarsLife.com, InfoWarsStore.com, get the high-quality supplements, the X2 Nation Iodine, the Super Male Vitality, the Super Female Vitality, the Silver Bullet, Colloidal Silver, highest quality. Get the magazine at cost. Give it to friends and family. Get the Molon Lobby t-shirts. Fund us in the info war. We are not NPR taxpayer funded. We are not MSNBC, Baker Bailout funded. We are funded by your free will. So continue to buy the products. Continue to spread the word about the transmission. That's how we're able to do this. I get so I mean, like, every day I skip commercials that cost myself the network thousands of dollars. Cost so much money to run this operation. I get so obsessed, I don't even try to make money. We need to do some mid-air refueling. We need to be resupplied. We need people to go in the next 3 days to commit to go to InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, to become PrisonPlanet.tv members, to share your memberships, to pray for our reporters, to just, it's a multi-pronged effort. We want stabilization. We want justice. We want freedom. We want the police to be safe. We want the public to be safe. It's so painful to see the police. I mean, Joe Biggs, you're a multiple tour combat vet of Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm not bragging about you, but, you know, your exploits were written about in Rolling Stone and Esquire. You know, you've, like, jumped out of armored vehicles, stabbed Taliban in the neck that was shooting at you. You've run operations. You brought people to be tortured. You've been involved in bad stuff. You know, you've been involved in checkpoints, all of it, heavy combat. And, you know, as Rolling Stone and others followed you for 3 years, three tours, I know this is, you were telling me on the phone yesterday or video Skype off air, this is the most angry and freaked out you've ever been. Is that because this is your country? And, I mean, I've seen the videos of the Taliban they captured. I don't see that much hatred in their eyes for our troops, even though they absolutely hate you, than the police have towards our media. Why do the police have such a hatred of the American people? What has happened to them? I want you to comment on that, and for David Knight to take over. Again, you are listening to InfoWars Live, broadcasting worldwide. This is real media. This is real analysis. This is wearing the truth openly on our sleeve, openly promoting our bias of telling the truth, promoting liberty. I'm Alex Jones, signing off for the day. I hand the baton over to the crew.
Go ahead, Joe. Respond to what Alex just asked you about. What is it that makes that drives this fear and this hatred that you saw in the eyes of this cop last night?
The guy had to have been on some kind of mind-altering drug or something. I mean, the guy was just belligerent, out of his mind. He had that look of like a rabid dog. Like, he was just looking. He didn't have any emotion other than hate. He just wanted to bite and attack, and that's all he cared about. And like a pit bull that's just rabid or whatever like that, or crazy, the owner's got to come and grab him by his collar and rip him back. And that's what had to happen last night. Don't be fooled by this Captain Johnson. I know he comes off on these press conferences as, you know, this fun-loving guy who's very passionate about what he does and he's a family man. But I'm going to let you know right now, he was walking in the middle of the streets with the police thugs pointing at journalists, telling them to arrest them. And then like five to six guys would grab them and toss them to a ground. There was a guy who was maybe 60 years old who was thrown to the ground, put a knee in his back, and they were just elbowing as they started cuffing him up, zip-tying him.
Let me reiterate this. So you're saying that Ron Johnson, the guy that was put in place by the Governor Nixon, I think, put him in charge because they weren't happy with the way the county was handling things, they said. So this guy, Ron Johnson, is walking down the street pointing out journalists, and then they're going over and physically attacking journalists. You mentioned one of the guys who's fairly old.
Yes. I mean, he pointed at Marcos at one point and had to rip Marcos back. He said, get him, that guy.
Wow.
And they came, you know, one of the guys started walking over, was like, no, stop, I got it. And I pulled Marcos back or whatever. But he was clearly sitting there just like a goon walking with it's easy to be brave when you've got 10, 15 guys just walking beside you with guns pointed at people. And he's just walking behind them, you know, nonchalant, just smiling and looking and pointing at people like, oh, that guy right there. Oh, no, that guy over there. Him right there. Get him.
Yeah.
You know, that's ridiculous. Everything they're saying on TV is a lie.
That's what's so disturbing when we talk to people there who basically are MSNBC listeners, like the guy that was on the radio the other day, that when you were talking to Alex and you had that guy, he was talking about how he was so happy that the feds were coming in. Now, they really don't understand what's going on. And I tell you, Joe, I think one of the most dangerous things about this is going to be if they held back information that from the very beginning could have shown that this police officer was acting in self-defense. If they wait and let this situation fester by hiding the evidence, by confiscating cameras from people, by being closed-lipped and shutting down, not talking to anybody, and then at some point they show it to a jury, but they still don't make it public, because that's the mode in which our government operates anymore. They shut everything down. They don't want to talk to the press. They don't want the press to be able to take pictures. They don't want citizens to see anything. They keep all this information secret, so that if they really did have justification for this, people aren't going to believe it. They're going to burn that town down if the guy was acting reasonably, if the police officer was acting reasonably and the jury lets him off. That's really going to be the ultimate provocateuring, I think.
Well, the scary thing as well, though, what I noticed last night, I have one of the videos up on the Real Alex Jones YouTube channel, Trendies. There are a lot of young teenage white girls from suburbia outside of that area, from other states, just out here because they think it's cool to be in a police state. They were walking around laughing on their cell phones, talking, chewing bubble gum, like, oh, my God, this is so much fun. Look at all these police. They're pointing guns at us. Yay. And I'm sitting here like, really? This is what our the generation below us is thinking? These are what the kids think it's cool to live in a police state? Are they trying to change it to where, you know, my essence is I have a fight in me like a dog. If you pin me up, I'm going to try to get out of there. I'm not going to sit there and just be tortured and beaten down and told what I can and can't do. I have fight in me. These kids were just, you know, yay, police state. It blew my mind to see that. And I kept pointing out, I was like, Marcos, look at that. Look at I have not seen kids out here before. They're just running around, having fun, sitting down, taking selfies, taking pictures, having a good old time. Meanwhile, everyone else there is really worried about the safety in their life, whether or not they're even going to make it home.
It's the social media crowd. You know, it's playing with Facebook. It's playing video games. They can't believe that there's any real consequences to life. It's amazing to me to see, and we reported, and there was an article up on Infowars.com, that the police were driving by, literally driving by, and this is being reported by USA Today, mainstream media, it's not just us that's reporting it, that the police inexplicably are driving by looters as this is going on. They're parked just a few feet down as the buildings are being burned and looted and not doing anything, and yet you look at how proactive they are, how in your face they are when it comes to peaceful demonstrators and to the press. It's absolutely amazing.
They want everything to collapse.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be right back with Joe Biggs in Ferguson, Missouri. Stay with us right after the break. And we're going to be joined later in the program with the president, or the CEO, rather, of the John Birt Society, Arthur Thompson. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Take you live to the Central Texas Command Center in the heart of the resistance. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, live in Austin, and we have joining us live in Ferguson, Missouri, Joe Biggs, part of the InfoWars crew there covering the unrest. And of course, there were a lot of updates last night. Joe, what's happening today so far that you see? How's the climate there?
This morning at 9, they began the process to find out whether or not the police officer is, rightful in shooting Michael Brown, or if he's going to be convicted and found guilty. So that starts today. We won't know the actual verdict for that for a couple of weeks from what Kit was told. There was only media out there this morning at the location. Stuff's pretty calm at this point, but you know, as we know, as the day grows, people start to get off work about 4 o'clock or so. It begins to heat up very quick.
Yeah, it always happens every night. Now, they still have a curfew. Is that correct every night, or is that
Well, technically, they're not saying there's a curfew. And this is one of the questions we asked in the press conference. Well, I didn't specifically ask for it. One of the journalists there asked and said, I thought you said there wasn't a curfew, Captain Johnson. He's like, correct, there isn't one. And then she goes, well, you had everyone off the roads by 12:30. Isn't that a curfew? And then he starts talking about his family. So he's obviously trying to dodge anything that has to do with that. So technically, on paper, there's not a curfew. But at a certain time, they start pointing guns at us and threatening to kill us. And that's basically a curfew. That's a martial law. That's a police state. That's hell.
It seems to me like if people are peacefully assembling and redressing their grievances, if the press is doing its work covering those people doing that, that shouldn't be a problem at any time that people want to do that. When you start constraining the First Amendment by an area like we saw happen in Nevada, like we've seen happen in the last several presidential conventions, political conventions for both parties, where they take the protesters or demonstrators at the political convention and they put them in a cage several blocks down from where they're having the convention, when they set up a free speech area in Nevada and say, if you get out of this, we're going to attack and arrest you. They've essentially done the same thing, but with a time constraint, not with an area constraint here. You know, the First Amendment infringed and constrained is no longer free speech. It's no longer freedom of the press when they do that to people. I feel as we look at this, and this is what I think is really the dangerous thing that's going on here, is we see them in the face of the press, as we see them try to cover up evidence, as we now see in the last few days, multiple reports from eyewitnesses now saying that he was that Michael Brown was shot. All the shots were in the front, as opposed to what we had originally heard, that there were a couple of shots in the back. I think that's perhaps the biggest powder keg that may come out of this yet, after they make this look like, after they lie to people, after they cover stuff up, after they hide everything. Then when they come out, if they eventually tell the truth, nobody's going to believe them.
Yeah, people will be so angry. It's not even, regardless of the outcome of the situation, there's so much hate in this area. There's so much hate from outsiders who have nothing to even do with this that are just coming out here to cause havoc and just completely help be a part of the social collapse in Ferguson. I mean, right now they're essentially from 10 o'clock at night until about 5 o'clock in the morning, you don't have any constitutional rights whatsoever in that area. They treat you like an animal.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot move freely. If you stand still, I was standing still on the side of the road taking a break last night for a little bit because, you know, as you know, I've been out here. This is my ninth day, and I'm out here, you know, maybe 18 hours a day standing up, and I just needed to take a break for a minute. A cop ran over. He's like, I've been screaming at you. You better keep moving. Get your butt out of here. And I'm just sitting here just like in the middle of nowhere. There's no one around me. I even went off into a dark area outside of the main stuff for the protest where just to get away from the madness and try to relax for a second and get off my feet. And this man ran over to me with his baton yelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Deliberately being provocative, just like the guy who is leveling the guns at everybody. These are the new rules of engagement. It's just absolutely amazing. The gloves have come off. They're no longer trying to hide anything. They war game this out. They say that they're looking to use snipers against leaders of the peaceful demonstrators. And they put this out, this document that they wrote just 4 months ago, they put it out publicly without even classifying it. They no longer even care that what they're doing is illegal, that it is treasonous, essentially. These would be war crimes if they did it in another country. But they're talking about doing this here in the continental United States. This is the way they're planning it.
The same men who arrested us in Virginia, if you remember, the Asymmetric Warfare Group, I have reports, and we've seen them last night throughout the internet, things like that. They're supposed to be Asymmetric Warfare, ex-Navy SEAL types, coming here now to help provide security with the police.
So, well, of course, that's what they've been training
for.
Area.
Yes.
That's exactly what they've been training for. And as you and I walked through that area and saw that, and that was a very chilling thing. As we walked through there and saw where they're training to fight in an American city, they don't fight for scenarios that they don't anticipate using. That's what they've been training for, not only there at AP Hill, as we see if you're watching this footage. That was the some of the footage that we shot there. We actually walked through the facility. They let us, the security guard let us in. The guys who were running it were pretty upset, I think, with her after she let us in. But that's they're doing that there. They're doing it down in Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. They have a more rural setting down there. They have another setting down in Georgia where we just had a video released from there where you could see them wargaming against black protesters, exactly what we see happening in Ferguson, Missouri. They're training to use the military.
When I talk about it, people tell me I'm crazy when I speak about martial law and things like that. And maybe it takes a Ferguson to happen for people to wake up. But I'm telling you, people are calling me now apologizing, going, oh, my God, I thought you were just, you know, out of your mind or something. But I'm watching your live stream every night. People are staying up till 3 in the morning with us because they're just so amazed at how this city is collapsing and how this police state is taking over and martial law going in effect and people losing their rights. I did a drive around through the town last night just to show people what it was like. It's not easy to get through, even in the outskirts. The police have it pushed back. You can't go around. The cops are just, you know, very mean, very rude. They won't give you any information. They try to funnel you down specific routes they pick so it gets you far away from anything going on. It is just ridiculous what is going on here. And people need to watch this stuff at night when we're filming it and to see the lawlessness and to see the complete and total collapse of what's going on. Because, yes, we saw them training for this. We've been reporting about it for months now, and now it is happening in real time. People in a world can actually see not just America's eyes, but the entire world is watching what's happening, and what they see is disgusting.
The frequency, the depth, the in-your-face aspect of this is just increasing all the time. Alex Jones has been talking about this since he started doing radio and documentaries for 20 years. The John Birch Society has been talking about that even longer, about the militarization of the police. Now it is all coming to a head. Now the gloves are coming off. Hopefully people will see this and will push back against this. One of the articles that I was talking about earlier, Joe, was from the Washington Post. And they were saying that back in June, Alan Grayson tried to shut this program down that the Pentagon is using to militarize all the small police departments, not just giving them MRAPs, but giving them all kinds of surplus military equipment. He wrote up an amendment, Joe, that even listed toxicological agents, nuclear, biological, and chemical agents, saying that we don't want any of this to be given to the police department. Yet 85% of the Congress said no. We will let them have any and all of that stuff. So that's what people need to understand. And the Washington Post article brought that up because they said, now that people have seen how this is being used, how these people have been, how the police departments have been retrained, redirected, repurposed, had their mission statement, as you will, changed by this federalization, by this militarization. Now that people have seen that, perhaps it'll be different. Perhaps now they can get this passed, get some kind of restrictions put on this militarization of the police.
You know, the first week I was here, I saw the same people every day. I got to know pretty much a good chunk of the community of Ferguson. They were out there every day. At this point, they don't even come out anymore. I spoke to two men who lived a few blocks from the main protest area, and they came out last night for the first time because they've been watching my live stream, and they just wanted to come out and just say, you know, thanks for what you guys are doing. But overall, they said they don't leave their house anymore. They've not been going to work. They are scared to just move around and live freely. They feel like their life is, you know, at any time and just be gone.
And that's
because
key
of some hot-headed cop. And I truly believe that there are federal undercover agents working with this police force. From the stuff that I've seen lately, there has to be something like that going on. It is just mind-blowing because it's a complete and total psyop they're running. They are trying to push this so they can bring in more military, do this throughout the country.
That's why it's so key that you're there. Those people realize it. As Jakari Jackson pointed out, they were telling people, go home, as they were starting to gas and the peaceful protesters and shoot rubber bullets at them. They were telling them, go back to your homes. Well, they were shooting tear gas into the yards of the people who live there. I mean, where are they supposed to go? They understand
that. They were going through
their yards. Exactly.
They were running through their yards, knocking over fences.
And if you guys weren't there, the mainstream media is basically pulled back with the police, embedded it with the police, listening to what the police are telling them, not on the site where they can see anything. And so they're just basically putting back the press releases that the police tell them about what's happening because they're not getting that eyewitness report. But it is dangerous for you guys to be out there. I know that from what Alex said, it's very dangerous for you guys to be there. So be very careful. I know you've got to go now and get your equipment recharged because you said things really start happening at night. You've got a lot of equipment we sent some equipment to you that you guys are there in St. Louis to pick up, and you got to get stuff charged. So I know you got to go. Any final words, Joe?
Just continue to watch our Ustream. Continue to check Infowars.com. Watch for our videos on YouTube because we're going to continue bringing up-to-date coverage of what's going on. And just all I can say is to the listeners, please share this stuff. Open people up. Wake them up to what's going on. Because if we don't make some changes, if we don't start knowing our and knowing what it is we can do, we're not going to be able to stop this from happening. And it's going to spread all over our nation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Joe. Be very careful. Regards to Marcus Morales and Kit Daniels and Mikhail Thalen, who are all there covering this. You guys be very careful tonight. We'll be looking for your reports.
Oh, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. You know, we need to follow the money. We need to take a look at what is driving this. There's an article that's up on InfoWars today. Congress members who approve the militarization of the U.S. police receive 73% more money from the defense industry. In other words, as I put in the subtitle there, Congress is for sale to the highest bidder. This is a Washington's blog article. This is why 85% of the Congress would vote down the restrictions of handing things like toxicological agents, nuclear, biological, chemical, not to mention all the other lethal vehicles and weapons that they're giving to the police. 85% of Congress is fine with that. Why? Because they get a lot of money from the defense industry. And what is happening is we're seeing that the Pentagon is so bent on getting this equipment so quickly to the police departments that they're even withholding it from fire departments. Now, I had somebody contact me, and that's why we always appreciate you giving us tips, saying that he had heard that the Pentagon was stopping the giving of surplus equipment to fire departments. Could I look into that? And it turns out that for a couple of weeks, they actually did that. This is a program, the Federal Excess Personal Property, FEPP, and the Firefighter Property Program, FPP. These have been in existence since 1956. As surplus military equipment came home from World War II, they started giving it to fire departments, primarily to small-town rural fire departments who had a need for it because they were on the spot when they had large wildfires that would happen out in the unpopulated areas. And, of course, they had small towns. They couldn't afford to buy a lot of equipment. So basically what they would do is they would gift these vehicles to them. They still paid $30,000 to $40,000 to modify the vehicles. What happened is on June 19th, the Defense Logistics Agency, that's the Pentagon Group, the DLA, which is basically giving all this equipment to the police departments, said, we're not going to do that for fire departments anymore. After doing this from 1956 on, they said, we're just going to stop it. We're not going to do that anymore. And they said, here's the reason. We had this agreement with the EPA 25 years ago, and we decided that we're going to now enforce it because the EPA was concerned about our vehicle emissions. Really? You haven't enforced that for 25 years, but all of a sudden, you're going to start enforcing that rule. Now, of course, the absurdity is that if you've got a wildfire that's going on and people don't have the kind of vehicles, the firefighters don't have the kind of vehicles they need to put this out, isn't that going to be a little bit more troubling for the atmosphere, for the environment, than the emissions from a couple of fire trucks? As they reported in Indiana and in Oklahoma, they said, in Indiana, $12 million worth of surplus equipment is now on loan to more than 250 volunteer fire departments in Indiana. Oklahoma said that they had over 8,000 vehicles and pieces of Department of Defense equipment that was valued at over $150 million being used by Oklahoma fire departments. So this was going to cripple them. That's what one of the volunteer fire departments said. He said, they are endangering lives with this decision. The National Association of State Foresters said that by taking this out, they were taking out the means of putting out about 83% of the wildfires because most of the wildfires are put out by local fire agencies. So they were crippling these guys. But what is it that the Defense Logistics Agency really wants to see? If you look at their site, if you look at the 1033 program, this is what they're telling people. They say, we'll give you pretty much any kind of vehicle you want, but you got to meet three qualifications. Number one, is the agency's primary function the enforcement of law? Is the agency's officers primarily properly compensated? And then here's the key thing. Number three, do the agency's officers have the powers of arrest and apprehension? See, they have to have all three of those. Mainly, they want people to have this militarized equipment if they can arrest and apprehend people. So that's why they didn't want to give it to the fire departments, even though we are told over and over again that, hey, if we have these MRAP vehicles, if we have these Bearcats, we can help people during natural disasters. That's not what they're looking for. And as one person pointed out, he said, about 99% of military surplus doesn't even meet EPA emission standards. He said, emission standards is something the government doesn't worry about on a battlefield. That's the key. That's the key, because when they got pushback from the senators, from the congressmen, and they backed down the first week of July, about 2 weeks after this had happened. They said, we're going to loan it to the fire departments. We're not going to give it to them. So that will make the EPA happy because we'll say that it still belongs to the Pentagon. It's still here for military use, so it's exempt. Now, do you understand? They're giving it to the police departments, but they have to loan it to the fire departments because if it's not used for military purposes, then the EPA gets upset about it. In other words, they're admitting that the police are being militarized with their equipment. that they're part of the military. That's why they have to loan it to the firemen. But of course, if you were listening to what I said, this equipment is on loan. All the documents, the news reports were talking about how that fire equipment was loaned. So that was just smokescreen to cover this up. Stay with us. We're going to be right back. Coming up in the next hour, we've got the CEO of the John Birch Society, Arthur Thompson. He's going to be talking to us about his book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglement. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. We're going to be joined in the next hour with the CEO from the John Birch Society, Arthur Thompson. He has a new book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglements. He's in the area because he has an event that's coming up tomorrow night in Houston, Texas. So if you're in the area, you may want to catch that. We'll have him live in the next hour. But I had promised earlier that we're going to have some Kardashian news. And even though we have cities that are burning down and we see our government moving to martial law, talking about how they're going to shoot peaceful protesters, you know, we still are concerned about what's going on in social media, aren't we? Just as Joe Biggs talked about these young trendy girls out there coming on the site just because they hear it's in the news and so they want to be a part of it. Maybe that's why the Kardashians wanted to go to Plum Island. And they say that was been nixed by Homeland Security. Now, for those of you who don't know, Plum Island is a, as I point out in this article from Newsday, that it is the site of a high-security animal disease research lab. Now, Plum Island is just off of the island, Long Island in New York, and it's a very secure area, very secretive. And as the Homeland Security Public Affairs Officer said, he said, we really regret that we didn't have enough time to do background checks on the Kardashians because we want to dispel the mythos of what's going on in this island. They say it's popular and fun to have conspiracy theories about a secret government lab on an island, but we want people to understand exactly what we do. We don't want people to be afraid of us. That's right. You know, you could probably visit DARPA if you gave them enough advance notice. You probably wouldn't learn anything, and I doubt that the Kardashians would learn anything if they went to Plum Island. Many people have made a case that what we see now with Lyme disease, which of course is put out by ticks, that essentially started up in the Northeast, not far from Plum Island. Many people believe that that was something that was either escaped accidentally or was put out there as a test by the federal government. It's a disease that spread from that area. Of course, that would never happen, would it? The government would never let something dangerous like that get out of their care, just like they wouldn't let Ebola get out of their care. That's why they sent the people who were sick with Ebola, they brought them back and put them in a level 2 facility instead of a level 4, which is the most secure. We just had news that broke last week, and we didn't cover this because so much has been happening in Ferguson, about the CDC say that a scientist took shortcuts handling a deadly bird flu virus, a deadly strain of bird flu virus. They say an investigation into the mistaken shipment of deadly bird flu virus from a government lab earlier this year found that a scientist took shortcuts in order to speed up his work, and he accidentally contaminated the samples. As a result, they shipped a virulent avian flu virus rather than a relatively benign strain to a poultry research lab of the Department of Agriculture. No one became infected or fell ill this time, and the pathogen was destroyed. But after CDC lab members learned of the safety lapse, they didn't notify supervisors up the chain of command until more than 6 weeks later. See, things like that can happen. You know, the Lyme disease could have escaped from there, even if they didn't deliberately do that. We have another story that's been percolating, and I first saw it about a year ago, about this other tick disease that creates a meat allergy of people. This is a Lone Star tick. Now, it doesn't come from Texas, even though it appears to sound that way. It actually is named that because of the design on the back of the tick. What happens is when you get bit with this tick, there is a sugar that enters your blood system. Your immune system reacts to that and creates an allergic reaction whenever you have meat. This is something that also is starting to affect a lot of people. This is something that also started up in the Long Island and Northeast area and moving down in Virginia into the Atlantic coast states. This is looking like the same type of thing we saw with Lyme disease. Very troubling to see that, and very troubling to see a DARPA research project to track another disease. $150,000. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. We're going to be joined in the next segment by the CEO of the John Birch Society, Arthur Thompson. We're going to be talking about his new book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglements. Yes, NAFTA has consequences. And even as we see those consequences being played out in our country, even as General Petraeus says that North America is what comes after America, they are moving to the next level. They are trying to join the North American Union, which is what they see now. No longer seeing America, Mexico, Canada, they see the North American Union. They're trying to join that with the European Union, with the Transatlantic Partnership, with the Asian Trade Group, so the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Very troubling implications of that. And of course, it's being sold to us as free trade. It's going to be a very interesting discussion with the CEO of the John Birch Society. Before we get to that, I wanted to play for you a little bit of the founder of the John Birch Society, Robert Welch. We have a short clip here to give you a feel for, if you've never heard this man, to give you a feel for what he said quite a few years ago. Let's go to that clip now.
Of which the United Nations is the outstanding but far from the only example. Now here are the aims for the United States. One, greatly expanded government spending for every conceivable means of getting rid of ever larger sums of American money as wastefully as possible. Two, higher and then much higher taxes. Three, an increasingly unbalanced budget despite the higher taxes.
This is 1958 that he's saying
this. Wild inflation of our currency. Five, government controls of prices, wages, and materials, supposedly to combat inflation. Six, greatly increased socialistic controls over every operation of our economy and every activity of our daily lives. This is to be accompanied, naturally and automatically, by a correspondingly huge increase in the size of our bureaucracy and in both the cost and reach of our domestic government. Seven, far more centralization of power in Washington and the practical elimination of our state lines. There is a many-faceted drive at work to have our state lines eventually mean no more within the nation than our county lines do now within the states. Eight, the steady advance of federal aid to and control over our educational system, leading to complete federalization of our public education. Nine, a constant hammering into the American consciousness of the horror of modern warfare, the beauties and the absolute necessity of peace. Peace always on communist terms, of course. And 10, the consequent willingness of the American people to allow the steps of appeasement by our government, which amount to a piecemeal surrender of the rest of the free world and of the United States itself.
That's a speech by Robert Welch decades ago. And notice one of the things he said there kind of struck me. He said state lines would become meaningless. Well, you know what? International lines have become meaningless in the wake of NAFTA. Just as we had Nancy Pelosi go to the border and say, we have one community, we just happen to have a border running through it. And of course, that border is just as meaningless as the border running between Texas and Oklahoma, as far as Nancy Pelosi is concerned. So that's what we're looking at here. We're going to be talking to Arthur Thompson about the implications and the methods of how they're doing this. They're basically setting up these regional trading zones. And then now they're at the stage where they are joining these together. Very troubling what they're doing, pushing through things that they could not get through, like CISPA, SOPA, ACTA, PIPA. They're pushing through that through the trade agreements as they merge the different states together. So join us right after the break. We're going to be back with Arthur Thompson from the John Birch Society.
Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we have joining us live here in studio the CEO of the John Birch Society, Arthur Thompson. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. You're here in the area because you've got a meeting tomorrow night.
Tomorrow noon at Christie's Restaurant.
Tomorrow, okay.
Houston, yeah.
Yes, and that's the what's the real price of free trade is a subject there, right?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And you'll be talking about your new book, which is International Merger by Foreign Entanglement. Boy, that's you got a copy of right there, and we can see that? Yes. That's exactly what's going on, isn't it? We've had this amazing clip, and we'll play that in a second. But, yeah, tell us exactly what's happening now. As people are seeing the effects of NAFTA, it's another level that they're already working on as we see what's happening with
them. Well, that's right. They work at many levels. They do a number of different things. They have an agenda. Each agenda has, it's like a mosaic, if you will, and there's a tile in that mosaic. This is one of those tiles, but a very important one that fits their agenda. And basically, they are trying to merge the United States into a new world order, as we all know. Mm-hmm. But they do it through various means. For instance, they used NAFTA to be the platform, if you will, for a North American Union. Now they want to use the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership to do the same thing, only to merge us with the European Union. I actually was there when the wall came down in Berlin.
Wow.
And I was over there doing a research on what was going to happen next. One of the guys that I met with was the public relations officer in Bonn, Germany, for the EC. Just that was the European Commission,
community.
Just before they named it the EU. He looked me in the eye, and we were as close as this in his office in Bonn, and he said, you know, we're going to be bigger than you geographically, population, and economically, and we're going to drag you into this union, whether you like it or not, kicking and screaming.
Wow.
And I sat there and I said, well, wait a minute. I'm here representing the New American Magazine. Certainly the Washington Post has been here, the New York Times. Why aren't they reporting on this? He must be saying the same thing to them. And he was doing so very arrogantly. This to him was a done deal. It was not if, but when. Oh, yeah. And so that's their plan.
A lot of people are very concerned about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, about the transatlantic partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because of the way they're being negotiated. I think a lot of people are looking at this and saying, why do we have our elected representatives not even allowed to read the transcripts unless they sign a non-disclosure? They can't take it with them. You know, they can go there with their staff. A couple of them have been graciously allowed to see this, but it is completely shut off from the elected representatives. And you have to look at this and you have to say, what are they afraid of us seeing in this? And, of course, some of it has leaked out, and we know that it is not just about economic issues. It's about fundamental freedom issues like control of the Internet. They've tried many times to ram these things through, been defeated in the democratic process, trying to get CISPA, SOPA, ACTA, PIPA through both in the United States and in Europe. And so now they're going to do it in the back door with a trade agreement, amongst other things.
Even the Bill of Rights.
Yes.
I'll show you an example of that in a moment. But that's what they do. You know, it's sort of the philosophy of we got to pass it to find out what's in it.
Yes, exactly.
But there are people who do know outside of the main negotiating teams, and that's what they call shareholders.
Yes.
And these are the international bankers and the multinational corporations. And so they get their sweetheart deals so they can compete in this market. But the little guy and the medium-sized businessman cannot, and they're shoved out. So what you see is more smaller and medium-sized businesses going out of business and banks as well. The smaller banks, the privately owned banks, that sort of thing.
Hundreds of banks were failing in the years after the bailout of the largest banks.
That's right.
Drudge was putting it up, you know, another 140, another 170 failed this year.
Mm-hmm.
driving out all their competition while they get massive subsidies from the government that they can then they eventually said, well, we paid it all back. Of course, I got a 0% interest loan to pay it back. It's not too hard to do that.
They're even talking about a negative interest rate now, yeah, in some instances.
Absolutely amazing. Now, as we said, some of the things that they're trying to run through with this, and of course, as they come against the smaller businesses who don't have any protection, they're allowing the largest corporations to essentially be elevated to the level of sovereign governments in a kind of, you know, whenever they have a trade dispute. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the thing is that what they do in these instances is to make it so that only one entity can compete or actually function in these areas. And we have a number of people that have that manage these things that are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, but also people that are deprived of real good education relative to what freedom means, what free enterprise is, and everything else. So they're very happy with these things. They're going to have a cushy job. They're going to make more money than the next guy. And they don't have any comprehension of what they're doing to their own country,
mm-hmm,
and ultimately their own family.
Mm-hmm.
These people, by the way, if they form, and I don't think they'll be able to do it, I think we can stop them, but if they form a new world order, these are the people that will be eliminated from the system first.
Yes, yes.
Because what they do is they're giving power to these companies to function. But see, what they don't understand is that the power is really in the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, they allow these companies to go forward and do what they're doing, but the power really is in the government itself. Ultimately, when they only have one company doing this and one company doing that, they'll just come in and nationalize them and take it over. Let me give an example of something that I like to use when it comes to power. A lot of people think it's money. It's nothing to do with money. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, none of these people were rich. They were poor off the streets. When they got that power, they didn't want for anything. Let's take an example of today. Let's say that David Rockefeller walked into the studio and told you to cut my throat. You wouldn't do it. You'd get on 911 and say, there's a nutcase here. Come and get him.
He's probably on SSRIs.
Yeah. but he's got a lot of retainers, so obviously he wouldn't be at the county jail very long. But that kind of money that he has doesn't give him enough power to tell you what to do because you're a moral man. Now, if we were in 1950 in Beijing, China, and Mao Zedong walked in here and told you to cut my throat, you knew you had two choices, yours or mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's power. Money can't buy that power in a moral people. And that's what's being built, is this kind of power. It looks like money in the beginning, but it really isn't. It is an accumulation in the government itself.
This is something that's been going on a long time. And, of course, we played it, this clip, and I want to go to that clip. You guys got that ready from Petraeus and Pelosi? This is something we played many times, and I think this really lays it out. Here we are, 20 years in the North American Union, and let's play that clip, what Nancy Pelosi and David Petraeus have just said recently.
Anyone who comes here sees that this is a community with a border going through it.
Boldly proclaimed the coming North American decades as the title now. It's founded on recognition that if you put these three economies together, as has been the case 20 years into the North American Free Trade Act implementation, you find unique countries in terms of demographics.
We're all Americans in this hemisphere, North and South America, and this crisis that some call a crisis, we have to view as an opportunity.
There you go. The crisis is always an opportunity. But what David Petraeus was talking about, he answered his own question. What comes after America? He says, North America. Well, what comes after North America is, as you pointed out, the globalist union. And that's why it's so important for us to get people educated about what is happening with the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well as the Transatlantic Partnership. They're now consolidating these regional economies together into a global regime, aren't they?
We are being integrated in our economy. And if people really go online and look for this economic integration situation, you will find that, for instance, a few years ago, George H.W. Bush signed an agreement with Putin saying that we are now partners in all sense of the term, that we are going to integrate our economies. And then Clinton followed it up with one of with the same sort of partnership agreement, and then George W. followed it up again to reaffirm this thing. If you go online and you start to look at Boeing and Lockheed, companies of that nature, GE,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that the integration of the process of manufacturing is very high. For instance, we cannot produce an airplane of any size in this country any longer without the Chinese and Russians supplying us the parts, particularly titanium parts.
Mm-hmm.
We see that Lockheed is working with them now on nuclear projects. They're working with the EU and China on manned space projects. Now, I kind of worry a little bit about that when I see a potential enemy working with our own companies on things that will be a detriment to us in time of war. The secrets that they will learn, the very fact that we will not be able to manufacture the things that we need to manufacture to win a war.
Well, what you have with that is you have a corporation which has bits and pieces of everything that you need being made in these different countries. So not any one individual country has the power that, say, GE does, because they are the ones who can make this happen for anybody or stop it from happening for
That's
anybody.
True. The more disturbing aspect, however, it is that they're moving their R&D, their research and development there. General Motors has even said that. They're going to do all of their R&D now in China. Boeing does, Lockheed does, all these various firms are doing their R&D in Russia and China, or both.
I guess I look at this too, and as we see the rise of robots, of artificial intelligence, as we see them taking over different aspects, it's not just that our manufacturing base has been put into China for the most part, but now we see that they're going to be competing even with people in service industries here. So the question is, what do we do when the robots are driving everybody everywhere, doing everyone's service for them? What do they need us for? And of course, many of them have said they don't need us, and they have a plan for that as well. We got to go to a commercial break. We're going to be right back with Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society, and his book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglement. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. Here in Austin, we have joining us live in the studio, Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. Just before we went to break, Mr. Thompson, you were talking about how the multinational corporations are essentially moving bits and pieces of critical industries amongst the different countries mm-hmm. so that nothing is made entirely within one country. And we were talking during the break about Boeing. Tell the people about what's going on with that in our defense industry.
Well, Boeing is cooperating with the aircraft industry in China to help them manufacture parts that are competitive on the world market for military aircraft and that sort of thing, particularly for the Chinese new fighter and the operation of the Chinese carrier. The Chinese mm-hmm. have a carrier now, and so the aircraft that operate on that, the Boeing's working with them to upgrade those things. So that should help the feelings of the Filipinos and the Japanese and the Vietnamese, feel yeah. real good about that sort of thing. And don't think for a minute they don't know that's going on. And so they look at us, at an askance look, if you will, because wait a minute, you're our friend here, but then you're helping our enemy mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
Just like something else is going on right now, I think that the listeners really need to know about, and it's a little off subject. But something has been worrying me, and I got it confirmed in the front page of the Wall Street Journal on Monday, and that is that in order to fight ISIS, mm-hmm. we're helping another terrorist organization. You see, because the Kurdish Workers' Party and the Democrat Party in Kurdistan were started by Russia. They used the hammer and sickle on their flag for years. Lately, they've been trying to obfuscate as to what they really stand for. But now they're on the terrorist watch list, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So we're helping one terrorist group on the watch list to fight another terrorist group.
That's right.
And then
we're probably equipping both of these. Actually, we have been equipping and training both sides of these things for quite some time. Absolutely. In Syria, they were killing and beheading Christians before they got together and gave themselves a new name and went across the border into Iraq.
Yep.
So So, yeah, it's exactly the way this thing rolls out. Well, talking about these trade agreements, I mean, these things are really kind of Trojan horses for a whole slew of different issues.
Sure.
One of the things, of course, we were talking about was the UN Declaration of Human Rights getting put in, just as we were talking about putting in these controls of the internet through the back door, calling them copyright violations. They can essentially put anything into these trade agreements that are being negotiated in secret by corporate representatives, and our elected representatives are not allowed to even see this stuff.
That's right. You got to pass it in a week.
Yeah.
You don't have time to read it. One of the things I have here from the European Commission, for instance, is the Trade Policy Committee of how to handle the CETA agreement, the Canadian-European Trade Agreement. And right here, after a few pages, they say that they reaffirm their strong attachment to democracy and to fundamental rights as laid down in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So they slipped this thing into the treaty. And these are actually not the Bill of Rights as you and I and America believes in the Bill of Rights that come from God. These are rights given us by the United Nations.
Yeah.
And then they have stipulations about how they can take them away. You have freedom of speech as long as it isn't against the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Freedom of assembly as long as it's not against the purposes and principles of the United Nations.
So they're not really rights at all. They're really a list of privileges that they grant to you temporarily and can take away at any point that they want. It's not a fundamental right. If it doesn't come from God, if it's being given to you by some government somewhere, some political organization, then they can take those rights at any point under any pretense.
True. And in fact, in some of them, they have an exception, for instance, on the freedom of assembly that any dictator can run a car through.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just want to control the people, but they make people think that they've got rights. They make people think that they've got free elections and that sort of thing. We just had a study on elections under dictators. Most people don't know that they did have elections in Nazi Germany and under Stalin, and how they were manipulated to where the people thought that they had a free vote, but really did not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to see that now creep into the voting system
in
the United States.
Yes, we've discussed many times the people who follow this very carefully. There's so many different ways that you can control an election. Mm-hmm. You can control who gets on the ballot. You can control who gets into the debates, as we've seen over and over again. And then, of course, whoever counts the votes, whoever registers the voters, whoever has custody of the votes, whoever reports this. I mean, you can get into that system in so many different ways. That's what's so troubling about it. And we can't even address voter ID without being called racist. We're going to get into some more of what's happening with the UN trying to impose local police controls on us and some of the things that you were just telling me during the break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight here in Austin. I have joining me in the studio Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. And we were just talking about a new American article earlier in the program. We're talking about what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri, and how the people there are so compliant and to the federal government's involvement, and they think that the federal government coming in is going to solve it, even to the extent that it now opens up the door for the UN to get involved. And we've seen the Secretary General come out and start talking about setting up UN standards for local police.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I talk about it in my book. On page 68, it shows that the a major out of the Baltimore Police Department attended a United Nations conference on UN standards for police. And they call it the United Nations Police Commanders Course.
Hmm.
So what they're trying to do is not just nationalize the police, but internationalize
the police. Yes. As it gets farther and farther away from us, it becomes harder and harder to get control of the situation. What we see happening, I think, so many different aspects of society, certainly we see it happening with the police, is that when you have someone who goes off of the mission statement or who is corrupt or who does something that you don't want to have that happen, there needs to be a method for getting control of that, for rooting out the corruption, for rooting out the bad behavior. And yet we see that that's not happening. We had a retired Marine colonel, Pete Martino, come on the program. He was first came to our attention when he spoke out about a very small town in New Hampshire being given a large Pentagon vehicle, a Bearcat in that particular case. It wasn't an MRAP. And he was saying they don't follow the mission statement, which ultimately is a constitution, but they each have their own individual mission statements. And if you don't have a means to purge this corruption, it just becomes systemic. And it seems to me like if you don't have any kind of local control or local control of these people, some way to pull that back locally, as it gets moved farther and farther away, it gets worse and worse, doesn't it?
Truly. And the thing is that the solution to it really is local involvement. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't approach a policeman and say, "You dirty rat." it doesn't work.
Right.
So you try and become friends and educate as many policemen as you can. At the same time, educating local officials. These are police powers. These are not. Mm-hmm. You've got to follow the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera. And so it takes an awful lot of education and goodwill to do that. Everything we see today is reactive.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get us to react. They're trying to get the people to react. They're trying to get the police to react. They put them through a lot of federal training, for instance, that imbues them with the idea that of them and us.
Yes.
And these are our enemies. And you can understand a little bit if the liberal press is there, a conservative cop is against the liberal press, because usually the press attacks the police. That's been the history of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look at what really happens in a situation like this. This individual that was shot from the front, it looks like he was attacking.
Mm-hmm.
But the liberal press rushes to the idea that he was shot in the back or whatever else they may say. So the police don't trust the media, and that causes a reaction mm-hmm. in the police and in the media as a result.
And we see that not only with the police, but I see it in our interaction with every government official.
When
we come to them and talk to them, it's like they're all acting as if they're the CIA now. You know, they've got this secret information that they don't want to share with me. There is no more transparency in government. Everything is, it seems like it's hidden. They don't want to be forthright and come out with it. I think if they had that information, they should have shared it much, much earlier. Now, when it comes out that all the shots are in the front, that the police officer has a major injury to his eye where he was struck, as things like that are coming out, if we don't get that out early, if they're not transparent about it, when it eventually comes out in a trial and the officer's found innocent, if that's what happens, the public's not going to believe it because
right.
they were so closed-lipped about it. So in a way, it's almost as if they are trying to foment disruption.
That's true. And if you remember the 60s and 70s, we had a lot of so-called peace, men of peace.
Mm-hmm.
But the peace, the way they implement it, was designed to provoke.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may have a peaceful demonstration, but it may not quite be peaceful. One of the things that we see in all of this is a reoccurrence of what happened in the 60s and 70s. As it becomes more reactive on both sides, you get more militarization,
mm-hmm.
and they pass more laws. Mm-hmm. They always want more laws. But we get back to the point, too. By the way, the John Birch Society in my town stopped a riot before it got going. We knew it was planned. We knew what they had to do. They had to get people into the streets.
Mm-hmm.
We went door to door in the central area of the town and said, "Stay home. Make it a quiet weekend." They didn't have a riot while all the rest of the country was burning down.
Hmm.
But it was no conspiracy. It just that it all happened at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
But we were able to do that by telling the people, "Look, don't let your kids out in the street this weekend. Just keep them home."
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the sort of thing is if people understand that you don't rally to the noise in the streets, you can't get them whipped up to do things that causes a reaction on the part of the police, which causes a reaction on the part of the crowd, which causes a further reaction, and it escalates out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do know there are outside agitators coming in. That's always been the problem in our country in that regard. I can say this almost universally. There's no riot that occurs that isn't organized beforehand.
Hmm.
even in the history of the United States. I'll tell you a little factoid that's going to be in my new book. Most people don't know that there was a riot in Philadelphia when it was the capital of the United States searching for Washington to drag him out and hang him. It's true.
Really?
Foreign agents stirred it up. But that sort of thing is always planned. All these things like that, these public disturbances are very well planned. I've talked to an awful lot of ex-communists and others that have told me they were trained to do that kind of thing and how they were able to do it. They could take a little spark and blow it up out of control very easily, particularly if there was suspicion between them and us. Mm-hmm. So what we advocate is let's get friendly. Let's talk to each other. Let's get to know our neighbors, for instance. You know, in some communities, we don't even know the name of our next-door neighbor.
Well, and as we've seen in Ferguson, the people that are being arrested are increasingly from outside of the area, the people who are the troublemakers. I think what's concerning us, as we saw from the very beginning, we saw new rules of engagement where they were essentially on the very first day lighting up with sniper rifles, people from a great distance. You could see the red dots on their chest. So we have a different set of rules of engagement here, but this is something that has been ramping up for quite some time. Before we run out of time, I want to go back and talk a little bit about the history of the John Birch Society. One of the people that I always knew the best was Larry McDonald. I really admired him. And Ron Paul said that he was the most principled man in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite a compliment coming from someone as principled as Ron Paul. We got a clip here where he went on CNN Crossfire just shortly before the plane that he was on was shot down or captured or whatever. And it was Tom Braden, who was somebody that was involved intimately with the creation of the CIA. He was in the OSS, and he also was involved with the Operation Mockingbird, which was, if people are not familiar with that, that was a means to get the press to be controlled by the CIA. This guy pulled all the stops out. If you listen to how many times he uses conspiracies, very interesting. This is Pat Buchanan, Tom Braden, and Larry McDonald. Here's a little clip of this, what you can see on YouTube.
This is the one group, I think, that those who would radically change America seriously fear. And a tremendous campaign was launched
Larry McDonald
in December of 1960 to move to discredit the John Birch Society and, frankly, launched initial orders coming out of Moscow.
Well, Mr. McDonald, I'm not a conspirator. I think even Buchanan would vouch for that.
Robert Welch,
I don't think so. Yeah, I'm a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Is that a conspiracy? Let me just tell you what Newsweek says this. The John Birch Society considers communism only one arm of a master conspiracy in which socialist American insiders are plotting to establish world government. Now, it also says, and here's Director John McManus, that's your public relations director, saying that former Secretary of State Alexander Haig and CIA Director William Casey are two of these master conspirators who are plotting to establish world government. Now, what do you say? You know, that kind of silly, asinine statement is what makes people laugh at the John Birch Society.
Well, Tom, I'm sure being a long-standing member of the Rockefeller apparatus, and as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations of long-standing, you're fully aware that there is an elitist core in this country that has seen value in subsidizing communism, of protecting communism.
It has?
Sure.
You're accusing me of subsidizing communism?
No, I'm saying
because
that
because I happen
is,
to belong
no,
to a
no, there
a
is an elite core.
Study group?
No, wait a minute. There is an elite core in this country that has dominated American society.
Well, I'm not one of them.
The Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations.
State Department, I suppose.
Well, let's face it, they've dominated the State Department for 40 years, and pretty much openly
so. All right,
so.
But what are they trying to do?
Well, their objective is to try to bring about a gradual transition in our society, a dissolving of sovereignty, and a moving steadily to the left on the political spectrum.
Well, who are they?
The elitist groups that I mentioned, particularly key individuals and policymakers in the Council on Foreign Relations.
Is the International Monetary Fund part of this?
Well, I would say the International Monetary Fund.
Let's pull it
Fund
out of there. You can see that entire clip on YouTube. It's about 15 minutes long. And Tom Brady was using that technique, which, of course, the term conspiracy theory came from the FBI in order to shut down anybody questioning the official story about the JFK assassination. They used that very effectively. At one point, Pat Buchanan said, you've used that term about 45 times now. And they use it a couple of more. He goes, well, that's 47. So that was basically the tactic of Tom Brady, again, a man who was intimately involved with the CIA. I just loved how Larry McDonald calmly took all of that and explained it, kept running with it. And at one point, he talked to Pat Buchanan about the Council on Foreign Relations, and Pat was kind of surprised that Ronald Reagan had put so many people from the CFR into his cabinet. Even though he wasn't himself a member, he put something like 200 or 300 people in the CFR and the State Department, essentially controlling it as it had been since Woodrow Wilson.
Well, there's something very fundamental about all of this. People think up ideas. People organize ideas. People finance ideas. People make things happen. And if things happened in politics, you know they were planned. Mm-hmm. If you have these plans and they're done behind closed doors or out of sight of the public,
like the TPP or the Trans-Pacific Partnership or these trade deals,
and if it's for evil, it's a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're talking about. Now, we do believe that there is an organized conspiracy at the top that manipulates all of these things. I'm putting the final touches on a book that I've been working on for 45 years on the first 100 years of this country, 1776 to 1876. And I show how that conspiracy worked in that time period. People don't know how much society and government has changed in America, and that how we have to get back to what they gave us originally. We have to unamend the Constitution rather than add amendments to it. We've got to get rid of the 16th and the 17th Amendments in order to have a balanced budget. It won't work otherwise. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature, that's a whole hour's talk, and you know we could be here all day. But the thing is that it's the information that the people don't have that is the real killer. I watch a lot of Fox News because I scream at them less than the other channels. Because it's not so much what they say as much as what they do not say.
Yes.
And one of the things that never comes up in a neoconservative atmosphere or on Fox and that sort of thing is the first purpose of our government, which is to protect the independence of our country. Mm-hmm. You can't have a free country, you can't have a constitution like we have or anything else if the country isn't independent. And that's the problem with these things. They're taking away our independence. They're going to change the constitution. They're trying to do it other ways at the same time. They've got a lot of different ways that they do these things, and they zig and zag, but they always have two main purposes, and they never take their eye off those purposes. And one is a world government, and the other is no religion other than the state. Mm-hmm. And if you look at everything through that prism, you will understand what they do. They may disagree with one another. And when you're playing this kind of power game, it's a very dangerous game. We always say that the problem we have with dealing with them is that we are dealing with criminals. We have to act morally and responsibly and ethically. The problem that they have, they work with criminals.
Well, and now the gloves are coming off. Now we're seeing in these trade agreements what has slipped out, that's been leaked out by WikiLeaks and others. We see that it is now to the point where it is direct attack on our individual rights, as we're talking about our freedom of speech, freedom of press, direct attacks on the internet. There's other aspects in it, but we also see our entire system of justice being turned over to essentially an arbitration sequence where the corporations, the multinational corporations, though, would have equal footing to our sovereign countries.
Sure.
Of course, anybody that has a business that is entirely inside one particular country, they would have no legal standing in those types of agreements. It's only the multinational corporations that get protected in that type of environment.
When you read Marx and Engels, the Communist Manifesto and other writings, you'll see they very rarely talk about revolution per se. They always talk about overturning the old social order or a social revolution, etc. Because a government is reflective of the society that put it together. Mm-hmm. And so they know that if they had a communist revolution, that society could have a counter revolution and throw the rascals out. So they know they have to change society first. And so I have a whole list in here of all the various things that are being done to the society of the United States and our citizens through treaties with the United Nations and how they control these things. Fundamental rights, banking, trade, industry, education, women, birth control, all the way down to tourism.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the family as well. They have the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Absolutely.
And everything, to essentially directly replace the family with the state.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's and everything will be the state. It's really interesting that way. One of the things that just to give you an idea of one of the problems with free trade that everybody can understand is what does every country in the world use as a monetary unit? It's called paper. Mm-hmm. That's what they all use. So if you have an agreement between one or more countries, they have a printing press for their paper. And if any of those get out of balance with speeding the press up, it throws the whole trade agreement out the window because the rate of exchange goes belly up. And so that's why they need a centralized currency to mm-hmm. take it over, which is really dangerous. Then you have no control over your economy at all.
We're going to be right back with Arthur Thompson from the John Birch Society. He's CEO of the John Birch Society. We're going to talk about, in the next segment, let's talk about some solutions.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm joined here in studio with Arthur Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. He is on, I guess you're on a book tour with your new book, International Merger by Foreign Entanglements, and you have a meeting coming up tomorrow in Houston. Tell us about that, where people can find you at that meeting.
We're at the Christie Restaurant. Not sure what the address is, but at noon, it's $25 because of the meal, that sort of thing. But I'll be addressing at length what's in my book, International Merger, and talking about what they can also do about it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I want to talk about that in this segment. What do we do as we see things accelerating? We see what we've been talking about for 20 years, you know, what Alex has been talking about, what you guys have been talking about for decades. We see this now being exposed. It's no longer being done in secret. It's being done openly. And so now the question is, what do we do about this now that it is getting so close to fruition?
Well, for one thing, people have to understand they have to be involved. If you think that you're going to stop this without being involved, you're very mistaken. One of the things that we say is that we need to educate the opinion molders in our community. We have to get close to the Boy Scout leader, the Kiwanian, the city councilman, our state representative, et cetera, and give them things to read. Mm-hmm. Give them DVDs on the Constitution and that sort of thing until they get to trust you and they start actually coming to you for information. As you get the opinion molders informed, things start to happen. The community starts to change. Now, everybody agrees that a third of the people during the war for independence were for independence. A third were against, and a third could care less. But the key was that the people for independence were able to get to 60% of that 5% who run the community. In other words, it was only 3%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If we can get to that 3% today, we will win. But we don't because we don't get involved enough. And we need to do it in a concerted manner so that we're all doing the same thing at the same time on the same subject, same solution, et cetera, and don't diffuse our forces. This is what we do in the John Birch Society. We organize local chapters to get out there and educate people, give them books, give them pamphlets, get them to subscribe to the magazine, come to speeches, watch DVDs, watch your program, that kind of thing.
And you do it in an organized way.
In an organized
focused way.
Yes. And so that's what really will save the day in the long run. And we've got places around the country where we've done this very well. And it's changed that state and that community. We're concentrating now in certain states. I won't mention which they are because we seem to have people that kind of get in there and try to muddy the waters when we when we broadcast these things. But we are organizing in areas to make a real difference in Congress. But again, most people don't want to get involved. They don't want to give up their time, their energy, or their money for whatever reason. And so you get just a few. And that's all it really takes. We know that we have 500 members in a congressional district. It's over. From dog catcher to Congress, they'll elect the most conservative constitutionalist on the ballot. It's the way it works. It takes a little time to season. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have 500 members and say we've won, because then those 500 members have to work in educating the community. But once they do that, that's the sort of thing that happens every time.
So when you go into the community, are you focusing primarily, or we're about out of time? Well, I wish we had more time to talk to you. If anybody wants to get more into this, of course, Mr. Thompson will be at the Christie's Steakhouse tomorrow at noon in Houston, Texas.
Thank you. JBS.org is our...
JBS.org and thenewamerican.com. Thank you so much. Join us tonight at 7 p.m. The Nightly News. Tomorrow, 11 o'clock, Alex will be back.